This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Been a tough one on all of you. Can't tell you how proud I am of each and every one of you. Coaches, players, staff, everybody stepped up. All three phases, man. Things we talked about. Offense, ran it for over 200. Threw it for over 200. Defense, shut 28 down, 77 yards rushing. Had to make a play on 17 at the end. What we do? Make a play at the end. Make a play at the end, man.
Who goes hardest the longest, man? That's how this game is decided.
The most physical football team won today. Can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Hey, Parks, congrats, man.
Yeah!
Fired up.
To say that's not a single play scene. Work because of me, it's because of
Let's
you guys, man.
Down,
yes, sir. We talked about it. Great way to respond to adversity.
There we go. That's what we're looking for. Sorry to cut you off, Parks. Hey, Michael. Been a while since I saw you. A lot's happened. Certainly, a lot's happened.
Yes,
a lot
has happened.
Saw you.
Yeah.
Let me say this. I think what we're seeing in Indianapolis, what we saw yesterday, I think this is the best example of a phrase that we use often, that everybody uses often in conversation, in reasonable conversation, in nuanced conversation, which is that two things can be true at the same time. First of all, congratulations to Jeff Saturday. Congratulations to Jim Irsay. Congratulations to the entire organization for beating the Raiders under difficult circumstances, circumstances of their own doing, okay? That was a hard-fought win. That was a team win, as they say. Jeff Saturday, highest winning percentage in NFL history. He's off to a great start in his head coaching career. They earned that win. The Raiders, even though it doesn't look like it, those guys get paid too, as they say. And the Colts got what they deserved yesterday, and they deserve congratulations. Jeff Saturday could be a good coach. That was the first thing I said about him. He could turn out to be a good coach. And Jim Irsay could turn out to be right about Jeff Saturday. But to paraphrase Keith Sweat, who famously said there's a right and a wrong way to love somebody, they could be right, and they could have gone about this the wrong way. I'm going to say that again. Irsay could be right about Jeff Saturday, who could be good, and the Colts still went about this the wrong way, okay? Because nobody ever said, I didn't see every show last week, Michael. I saw the highlights. I know what I said. I know what I heard people say. Nobody ever said that Jeff Saturday was not a capable leader. Nobody ever said that he didn't know football. Nobody ever said that he didn't have credibility as a player. And nobody ever said that he could not be successful, because that would be stupid to say what he could not do. Okay, because there's a lot of experienced coaches, including his counterpart yesterday, who suck. Okay, so nobody ever said any of those things. All anybody ever said was that this was insulting and disrespectful to the people in that industry who have worked tirelessly up the ladder to be a head coach. That's all anybody ever had a problem with. Nobody ever had a problem with Jeff Saturday personally. They just
everybody
had a problem
loves Jeff
with
Saturday.
Everybody loves Jeff Saturday.
Everybody
to
loves
know
that.
Jeff Saturday is to love him. Everybody loves Jeff Saturday.
Exactly what I said last week. That's exactly what I said last week.
That's what you
to
said.
To know him is to love him.
There you go. The process was what we hated. We only hated the process. I'll say this, Michael, as I pass it to you. Just so I don't, you're a seven-time New York Times bestselling author? Seven? Seven or eight?
You know, I lose track, Mike.
Who's counting?
It's six.
Okay. Most of those books are about football. Okay? Most of those books are about football. If you were hired to be the general manager of a football team today, what would people be saying about you? That's my dream job. I told you I'd leave today to be the general manager of an NFL team. I've been around football. I've covered football for 20 years. I've managed teams, fantasy teams. You know, I've managed teams before. I've managed people. I'm a leader of men and women. If somebody gave me the dream job that I want today or tomorrow, what would they be saying about me? A lot worse than what they said about Jeff Saturday, I'll tell you that much. So that's all it was about, was the process, not the person. Congratulations to the person, to the people who pulled out this win. Starting with Matt Ryan, continuing with Jonathan Taylor, all the coaches, all the players who stepped up and did their jobs yesterday. Congratulations. Maybe there's more where this came from. But I stand by everything I had to say about the process by which Jeff Saturday got this job.
Yeah, the process. The process is weird, Mike.
Or lack thereof.
I just want to.
Or lack thereof.
And
sorry.
Can we go back to? I need you and others to help me on just the process. Just a little thing that's bothering me. Just things that just kind of stick with me. I can't move on from this yet. Tell me again why Marcus Brady was fired. I mean, like, Marcus Brady was fired. I can understand why if you felt like you had to fire Frank Reich. All right, he's a head coach. But as far as I can see, only one assistant coach was fired. One assistant was fired.
I'll answer it quickly. We're talking about an impulsive owner. Three people got fired, technically. Three people got fired.
Frank Reich, Marcus Brady.
I don't remember. And Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan got fired. Because it was like, no, I mean, so we don't want to pay him $17 million, Garrett. He didn't until it was he was conveniently rehired in order to put Jeff Saturday in the best position to succeed.
Okay.
So forget the $17 million guaranteed. Now we're gonna put the guy I want to win in position to succeed.
We said the same thing. Like, because I agree. I agree. That's exactly what happened. That, you know, Matt Ryan got sat down. He didn't get fired. Like, a lot of people got sat down. A lot of people got humbled.
He was still getting paid.
They didn't get fired. Yeah. Marcus Brady got fired. He probably doesn't have Colts NFL on his email anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas Matt Ryan, hey, put the hat on. You watch Sam Ellinger, even though you know and everybody in the locker room knows you're better than he is. Hey, John Fox, you got sat down. You should be the interim coach. You're not. You know, other people, hey, Gus Bradley, you should be the interim coach. You're not. Quarterback coach, you should be calling plays, but no, your assistant is calling plays. But Marcus Brady had to leave with Frank Reich, the only assistant who had to leave. That's just nuts to me. Anyway, process, I don't understand. I agree with it, but I don't understand why Matt Ryan took the job over. He never should have lost the job to Sam Ellinger. But if that's what you were going to do, if you were going to say Matt Ryan gives us the best chance to win, you probably should have stuck with Frank Reich in the first place. You don't think Frank Reich would have won this game? I can tell you, he would have. He sure would have. And Mike, you can say anything you want about your own credentials and the fantasy teams that you've managed and the men and women that you've led. You would have won this game too. You would have, because this ain't about the Colts.
This says more about the Raiders. Yeah. No, I listen.
They ain't got nothing to do with the Colts.
I'll give it right back to you. I just wanted to be fair, because the Colts, as an organization, were the subject of much criticism last week.
Yeah.
And if Jeff Saturday would have shit the bed this week, best believe we collectively be shitting on him today. That's the truth of the matter. They got a win when very few people expected them to win.
I called this last week.
But having that said, you're right. If there was ever a game to debut against, it was the Raiders. Hey, well, not just you. Jeff Saturday prophesized it. Remember his old tweet? Raiders are awful. Raiders are terrible. So if there was ever a game, it was this one.
It's a good time to come in. You know what? Hey, why did Jim Irsay rush it? Hey, you got the Raiders on the schedule. Why not? And I don't know how much you want. I don't know how much you want to talk about them, but man, Josh McDaniels. Look, I thought of this the other day. When the players, like Devontae Adams said it, and Derek Carr said it too. Said, "Oh, I love my coaches," but then they start tripping. They start talking about all this other stuff. And said, "No. This ain't about my coaches. I love my coaches." And I think both things can be true. Here it is. I think they love their coaches. I don't think they love their coaching. And that's what they say. We love them as individuals. We don't love what they're giving us. And
it's like, I love all,
so
God. I love all God's children.
Yeah. It's one of those. There's right. so much. Anytime your starting quarterback is up there pausing and crying, talking about things that are going on and, you know, how pissed off he is, and it seems like it's being dramatic, but, and I'm not criticizing reporters, I know it's tough in the moment, seems like it's being dramatic, but he's not really saying anything. He's emoting, but he ain't saying nothing. Then that reflects on the head coach. Bill Belichick said a long time ago, he told me, he said, look, when you're the head coach, everything is brought to your desk, and 75% of the stuff has nothing to do with you, but you're responsible for it. He said, it really has nothing to do with you, but they'll bring it to you. He said, if something is wrong with the field right now, they'll come talk to me. He said, I don't know anything about the field, but they'll talk to me. If something goes wrong, like outside the stadium, I don't know anything about it, but they'll come to me. And so Josh McDaniels, it may not be your fault, but it probably is. It may not be your fault when Devontae Adams
but
is
but
going in front of the media saying
somebody said that famously. It's not, I'm not at fault, but I'm responsible.
Oh, well, whoever said it is smart. Because that's what's going on with McDaniels. And I keep checking. See, and I'm not rooting for it. You know, look, Mike, you know how I feel about Josh. Known him for a long time. Love Josh. I do. I love Josh. I keep checking every 20 minutes. I'm like, has it happened yet? It's going down. It's going to happen.
It's going
to happen for him. It may even happen before their next game, because it's just he has set himself up in a way where he didn't manage the expectations properly for the franchise, the owner somehow getting us to the next level. And what I would have said to him is, hey, you know what, Mark? I know I can get you to the next level, but before you get to the next level, you're going to have to take a couple steps back. I have never heard of a franchise who can miss on first, second, and third round picks as consistently as your franchise did and survive it. No, we're going to take some steps back, but I promise you we'll get there. May not be in year one, but year two, year three, we'll be doing some things. So he's going to pay the price for some of his doing and some from the previous administration.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, listen, and it may not be this simple, but what I do know is Josh McDaniels started his head coaching career 6-0. Since then, he's 7-24.
That's not okay? fair. That's not fair.
He's
That's not
7-24.
You can't do that.
They keep records, don't they? I know we don't like wins and losses as a quarterback stat, but it's for damn sure a head coach stat. Okay.
What year did he stop coaching the Denver Broncos?
This is why I said it may not be that simple, but it's a fact. Okay? That's facts, as the kids say. All right. He's 7-24 in his last 31 games as a head coach. Listen, man, this head coach thing just may not be for him. Like, why can't Josh McDaniels be Ben McAdoo? Maybe they're the same person. Maybe Josh McDaniels is just a damn good offensive coordinator who was blessed to be the offensive coordinator for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Maybe he was just in the right place at the right time. Maybe he hit the lottery. And that's what Josh McDaniels might not be a head coach. On the other hand, maybe he's not the right head coach for this franchise at this time. The blame in this situation, to me, falls upon the owner. The blame in this situation, to me, falls upon Mark Davis. Because you brought Josh McDaniel in to potentially an untenable situation for anybody. Because you made the playoffs last year with an interim head coach who's not winning you any press conferences, who's not selling you any season tickets, who's not winning you any offseason. And the players loved him. And they responded to him. And they played for him. I don't know who needs to hear this. As a matter of fact, I do know who needs to hear this. David Tepper, if the Carolina Panthers, I was just there in Carolina watching them beat the Falcons. If the Carolina Panthers keep responding to Steve Wilks this way, look no further than Las Vegas for how you need to be mindful of wanting a sexy Sean Payton type hire when what you have in front of you is working just fine. consider the 80-20 rule. So, Mark Davis had 80% of what he wanted. He had a playoff team. He had a coach that was getting the players to play for him. That they had the most adverse season in recent memory last year in Las Vegas, and Rich Bisaccia shepherded them through that. But you want the sexy guy. You want the guy with the Belichick tree. You want what should be forbidden fruit. Because if I'm an owner right now, I ain't hiring nobody else from Bill Belichick's tree. That's poisonous fruit. It ain't forbidden fruit. It's poisonous fruit. Okay? Been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Nobody else gets
serpent.
A job from Bill Belichick's tree.
Here comes the serpent up around there.
No disrespect.
Don't you want that apple?
I know a
apple?
Lot of those guys. Don't I you like want a lot it? Of those guys. Hell no. Let somebody else do that again.
No, but, I don't want that
in
apple.
In fairness, Michael, maybe Josh McDaniels needs more time. Okay, I'll ask you this as a preeminent expert on all things New England Patriots dynasty. Maybe Josh McDaniels is, and the 99 Patriots didn't make the playoffs, but maybe Josh McDaniels is to the 2022 Raiders what Bill Belichick was to the 2000 New England Patriots, where he looked completely incompetent, where a lot of people were trying to run him out of town with him in 5-11 as he was trying to put his stamp on the team. And some people were resistant. I need to hear names from Devontae Adams and Derek Carr. You want to talk about some people don't take it as seriously. Some people haven't bought in.
Yeah,
name
yeah.
names.
Yeah.
And them dudes got to right. go. So Mark Davis got one or two choices. You can either eat this contract and go coach searching again, or you got to purge this roster and get Josh McDaniels his kind of players and set him up to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And you talk about the Patriots, 99 to 2000. They did.
Is that a fair comparison?
That's a great comparison. You know why? Now, they didn't make the playoffs in 99, but they won 8 games.
They had Pete Carroll, and they had Pete Carroll,
they
right?
They won 8 yeah. and 8. They were 8 and 8, and then they bring in a new guy, and the new guy is 5-11. So you go down 3 games. Well, we won 8 games last year. I thought you were supposed to be some great coach. And what he couldn't say, in New England was the same thing he couldn't say in Cleveland when he took over. Like, when you take over, now – I always appreciate the guys who take over and don't want to tear up everything. Because I would be like that too. I wouldn't tear up everything. You mean to tell me you inherited a situation that has no value? I find it hard to believe. Every team has some pieces that even if you haven't won a championship, you better hold on to these guys because they're going to be a part. If you actually make a championship, they're going to be a part of the fabric. Got it. But what he couldn't say in Cleveland and what he couldn't say in New England is, you gave me a roster. You gave me a house with no floorboards. Looks good on the outside. But I can't walk around here. I can't sleep in here. This place is a mess. And the reason I think you were kind of unfair to Josh McDaniels, and our friend Brandon Marshall were unfair. Brandon Marshall, I don't know if you caught it, he said, Josh McDaniels is incapable of leading men and getting people together and all that stuff. He was. He may have been incapable in 2010.
Sure. Right.
But here we are in 2022, a dozen years later.
No.
It's not the same problem.
Maybe he just needs more time.
It may not be the same problem.
I did say that. I said maybe he just has to put his – that's why I brought up the 2000. Maybe he can't coach, or maybe under these circumstances – he's just not set up to succeed right now. But all I know is Jim Irsay looks really, really right today to bring this full circle when he said a lot of coaches with experience, they're terrible. Or some way he said
they have that fear.
Maybe the Raiders should go hire Charles Woodson. I don't know. Maybe go hire Rich Gannon. Because Jim Irsay clearly got it figured out, whereas Mark Davis did not.
This is what you know. Can I tell you something real quick, though?
Yeah.
Love having you on the show, Mike. But Jim Irsay said he loves players who don't have experience, people who don't have experience.
So you think I can be the GM?
You need to write him. Reach out to your boy.
Listen.
Reach out to him.
Listen.
You want to get in football? You want to be the GM?
I'll be Chris Ballard's assistant. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, experience is bad. That's what he said. That's what I heard him say. Experience is bad. Go ahead and get that paper. Go ahead and get that job.
Hey, well, you know, I still come on the show once in a while, as I do
once
now.
Once in a while, I doubt it.
as I do now.
I don't think so.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Just the way my body, how it went up, him catching the ball in his hands and me taking it from him. I mean, the whole play was crazy. But, you know, it starts with the O-line. It starts with blocking, giving Kirk that time to give me, you know, that opportunity to go up and make a play. It's not me. This is a collective team win. So many people play so many different parts in this win. But, you know, it's glad to be 8-1. It felt like it was unreal. It felt like a movie. But just like I said, God is with us. You know, I told everybody, this is our season. This means this is our season for us to win out and to go to the Super Bowl. So we just got to keep working, take on week by week, going out, fix our mistakes, and get ready for the Cowboys.
Okay, first and foremost, that might be the best grill I've ever seen. Not just from an NFL player at a press conference, but like in general. Is that the best catch you've ever seen? It is for me. Not to be a prisoner of the moment, but that's the best catch I've ever seen.
Man. Okay, here's it. Okay. The conversation. First of all, let's just put the candidates up there. Let's put the candidates okay. up. And candidates. This is going to win. This is going to win
first
because
need,
I think I'll tell you right
criteria.
Now.
Oh, wait, we need criteria. Best catch needs to be separated from most significant catch. Because those two things aren't necessarily the same thing.
I think this is why this one wins, because it's both. This one is both. It's a great catch. It's just a great catch out of context, in a vacuum. Look at it. Wow, he caught that? That's crazy. And then coming down with it, the way he came down perfectly, got the ball. And it's on 4th and 18? Are you kidding
fourth
me?
And 18.
Yeah. So here it is. Go ahead, run that thing. Run that thing. Look at that. Oh my God. That's like reaching back for a rebound and snagging.
It's inexplicable. We know he caught some other passes. Don't worry about the other passes. Just show the one we care about. That's all great.
Yeah,
he had 193 yards.
Yeah,
that's all great. He's a great receiver.
Keep showing that one.
Show the one play. We want to see the one play, put it on loop. Over and over again. Listen.
Yeah, but I would say
it defies the laws of physics, but it is the best. Why is it the best catch you've ever seen?
So, so great catch, but I'd say also on the list, really quickly, OBJ, of course,
OBJ,
put him on the map. Monday Night
Pickens
Football.
Pickens had one this year that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thursday night.
And
yeah.
I would say, you know, there's some other ones. Mario Manningham, Julio Jones,
Tyree,
in Super Bowl.
Of course, Tyree. I would say this was the most improbable catch since David Tyree. And this one, because David Tyree had Rodney Harrison clubbing him, if I'm not mistaken, as he came down in the Super Bowl with the ball using his helmet. That was an interception. That was an interception.
It's a bad ball.
And
it's a horrible throw.
Odell Beckham's it in spite of the fact he hit. So this was two versus one. The DB had two hands on the ball. This is the grown man he took it from and snatched it with one hand as he's falling back. This is the craziest catch I've ever seen. Which one? The catch?
It's another one.
The one that's called
we are being prisoners of the moment.
What?
You know why?
Which
DeAndre
one?
Hopkins.
What's better now?
DeAndre Hopkins. End of the game.
Yeah.
Over two guys, right? Two guys. And he takes it from him and scores.
Wait.
I think to win the
game.
Was it with two hands?
I mean, this is with one hand going backward against his body. He's pirouetting in midair, going back. I mean, it's Odell Beckham plus. It's Odell Beckham on steroids. It's Odell Beckham. Come on, you're not supposed to catch that ball. That is the definition of a contested catch. Best catch ever. But check it out.
Except Go ahead. D-back, but Lewis helped him, though. I can't say it's the best catch ever. Because, look, Lewis, thank you, help. Thank you, Lewis. You kept the ball off the ground. Because if Lewis is not there, maybe it falls. His body helped cushion it temporarily. He needed a little bit of a cushion before he can control it. And Lewis, look at Lewis provides for him. Okay.
He's like Lewis got his hands on the ball. You try to qualify. Lewis got his hand on the ball. Because I'm sorry. And then here's the other thing. With Odell Beckham, and I'm not taking anything away from Beckham, but we have seen so many people since Beckham have Odell Beckham-type catches. None have been. Yeah. I didn't think Pickens was against the Browns, I think it was, on Thursday night, was better than Odell, but it was Odell-esque. I don't think we are ever going to see a better catch than that. We may see other ones like that, but I'm sorry. Woo. There's immaculate reception. Immaculate reception, and here's Nat texting me.
Not a great
Nat
catch.
Nat talking about Tyree still got to be the best catch because of the stakes. I said best catch versus significant is two different things in my mind. Yes, it was a Super Bowl, but physically, he pinned it up against his helmet. Great catch. Miraculous catch. Especially for the caliber that David Tyree was or wasn't, as the case may be. Justin Jefferson going backward with another dude with two hands on the ball, you ain't supposed to be able to catch that ball. It's inexplicable.
I would say best for me. Best catch of the worst throw. Okay. Other catches, like the throw was actually in the neighborhood. That was such a terrible throw from Kirk Cousins. He put it in the area.
He said, I'm going to throw it up to you. Well, you got Justin Jefferson. That's what you do. That's called catch radius. Yeah. You know that.
By the way, Justin Jefferson, I want to say, we always say Derek Carr is the quarterback, a brother from another. Justin Jefferson is the official wide receiver, a brother from another. We had a chance to talk with him when we were in L.A. before the Super Bowl. Great being in conversation with that guy.
Damn LSU receivers. And all of them just do crazy stuff.
Just keeps getting better. Keeps getting better. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting.
Both 100-yard and 150-yard games for his first 3 years, and he ain't even through yet.
Yeah, he's had a couple of he's had some great games this year, but recently he had a little bit of a touchdown slump.
Yeah,
and now he's back. He slump, in quotes.
Relative, but yeah.
I think he started off the year. It's funny how his years turned out. He started off the year after game one. I said that's the best receiver in football. Yeah. Philadelphia, Darius Slay was in his feelings. He felt like he was being disrespected. When Philly played, their only loss to Philly, when Philly played Minnesota, and he had a really good game against Jefferson. And so Jefferson, we kind of he got quiet for a little bit, but I think we're back to the beginning of the season conversation. If you ask me to pick one, I know it's not just this game. If you ask me, pick a guy, pick the best receiver in football, I'm going right there. Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, no, today that's hard to argue. I don't know if we're going to argue or agree, but we'll come back to this game because I don't really know where you stand on the Vikings. It's been so long. It's been a couple weeks since I did the show. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure where you are on the Vikings. I know the last time I was on, I was apologizing for forgetting to mention them among the good teams, but I know I'm not alone. I haven't been alone and overlooking them. That day is dead, bro. We don't roll like that no more with this team. But we'll come back to that later.
Why don't you ask me where I am on the Bills?
Well, that too. That too. Oh, wow. I think I know.
What were you so upset about at the last drive of regulation there coming off?
Just every single play call, probably.
Is there a reason those play calls were upsetting to you?
Yeah, I feel like we were like 30 yards from end of the game in regulation. And also felt like it was 2 minutes, so I was going to be calling those, and I was in a pretty good rhythm. Obviously, didn't have a ton of attempts tonight, but it felt like I was in a pretty good rhythm. I felt like I threw the ball just about exactly where I wanted to tonight. And so I wanted a chance to go win the game.
Charles Robinson, most quarterbacks, after they call their head coach everything but a child of God in full view of the world, Most quarterbacks may say something along the lines of, hey, you know, that happens. Competitive. You know, that's between me and Matt. Okay, that's private. Yeah. My man said just about every play call. So my question to you, Charles, is that just Aaron being Aaron and heat of the moment, or is that representative of he and Matt's relationship and a larger issue in Green Bay?
He has told us. I don't understand why we don't just accept it for what it is, because he said it. He said it in every way except for how he just said it there. He wants to run the offense. He doesn't want to run the motion offense that Matt LaFleur wants to run. He wants to run something tempo. He wants to run something West Coast. And he said right there, 2 minute. We were X yards away, 2 minute offense. I call that offense. And I'm going to call a tempo offense that's not going to have motion. And when that happened, when he like flipped out, I looked at it and I backed it up and I started to watch kind of what the play calls were. It was when you watched it, it was because the last play in that drive right before he flipped out, I think he had to wait to let someone get set. And I think that's what set him off, is he was like, nobody should be moving. We should just move up, get to the line. I call it. Nobody's shuffling around. I'm picking where the ball's going. Let me run this offense. That's it. He's saying it over and over and over again. He thinks he is a better OC than Matt LaFleur right now. That's it. Period. That's all he has not said. That is the one sentence he has not said. I am the best OC on this team. That's it.
Well, but you're right, though, Charles. It's easy for us to deduce that or infer that because we know he thinks he's the smartest person in the room, regardless of the subject.
Well,
why would he not think
now.
He's a better person? But why would he not be better? Why would he not think that? Of course he thinks that.
Okay. And listen, I will say this, too, by the way. Jeff Saturday started a week, okay, on Tuesday. Yeah. He didn't know who his offensive play caller was. He didn't know who his quarterback was. But apparently he clearly told Irsay, hey, you know what? Guess who the guy is who probably knows our offense best and should be the quarterback and should probably be calling most of the offense? Yeah. It's Matt Ryan. That's how they won that game. So, I said this and I wrote this weeks ago. Aaron Rodgers wants to run the offense. Just give it to him and see what happens. Like, if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, then you can tell him to shut the up. That's it. Yeah.
Well, Nathaniel Hackett's been exposed. Coming from Aaron, countless coaches have been exposed because he's been running the offense. Pretty soon he's gonna be Bill Russell, Michael, and he's gonna be a player coach. Because now Jeff Saturday actually coming from being a broadcaster, and now he's the head coach. Aaron's like, shit, I could do that.
Hey, listen, but you mentioned it. Hey, Charles, you already mentioned it. We talked about Saturday earlier. I was watching. You can never tell from a post game locker room scene. I know I'd be in there and be like, this dude just got here yesterday. What's he talking about? I'm so proud of you, man. I don't even know you, man. What's your name again? Jeff what? Jeff Saturday?
Yeah.
All right. But how do you think he is connecting with those players? And is it over for the Colts? I mean, they are 4-5-1 in a kind of wide open AFC. What do you see there?
I'm telling you, the Matt Ryan thing is significant to me because Matt Ryan was benched by Jim Irsay, okay? And I don't think there's anybody in that locker room who realistically believed they had the best. And this is...
That's a froze. That's a freeze. That's a Zoom era.
Yeah.
That's early days right there. That's early days of Zoom.
Once Reich went out the door... Is.
Now we're back.
My bad. So look,
no, it's not your bad. You're not in charge. You're not in charge of your own internet.
You ain't in charge of Wi-Fi.
I mean, technically, I am. Listen, once Reich went out the door, once Marcus Brady wasn't on staff, it was Matt Ryan knew that offense best. Everybody in that locker room knew that. And so, to me, the fact that he made that decision was a coach CEO moment. Okay, not a hey, I've been here since camp. Not a I'm in the trenches with you guys and I know this offense better than you. It was, I'm going to be the CEO and I'm going to delegate to who I think has the knowledge and put that person in position on the field. So from the standpoint of one decision, and that's it, just one decision, I will say I think he made the right one decision there. And I guarantee you, at least the players winning that game felt good, okay? It felt good. I mean, the staff could still be pissed because they all got passed over for Jeff Saturday, but for the players themselves, they're all out there to win games, and that had to at least make them feel good to be able to walk out of that one.
Conversely, everything about the Raiders is bad. Talk about feeling bad. We referenced it earlier in the show. Maybe everybody heard it, but it's worth hearing again if you have. Here's Derek Carr and Davante Adams on the state of the Las Vegas Raiders.
I love Josh. I love the car. I love our coaches. They've had nothing but success, you know, way more success than I've ever had, you know. And, you know, I'm sorry.
Derek, continue.
To finish that, sorry for being emotional. I'm just pissed off about some of the things, you know, that a lot of us try and do just to practice. What we put our bodies through just to sleep at night. And for that to be the result of all that effort pisses me off. Pisses a lot of guys off. It's hard knowing what some guys are doing. Like I said, just to practice what they're putting in their body just to sleep at night. Like just so we can be there for each other. And I wish everybody in that room felt the same way about this place. And as a leader, that pisses me off, if I'm being honest.
Just got to stay the course, man. It's easier said than done, but just got to stay the course. Got to have everybody on the same wavelength. Everybody's got to go out there and put everything into it, you know what I mean, throughout the week. And then Sunday's supposed to be fun, and that's the least fun day of the week right now. So that's a problem. We got to fix that. You guys got to play for one another, play a full game, and, you know, that's 60 minutes from start to finish, coming out starting fast and then closing out games. Making plays when you know, taking on that burden, wanting to be the guy that, you know, or wanting to be on offense when it's time, or wanting the ball, or wanting to shut it down when you're on defense, just wanting to be the guy that make the play. And, you know, I just don't got enough guys that are fully bought into that right now. And I think people like the idea, but when it's time to actually execute, it don't turn out that way.
Charles, what's wrong with the Raiders? Or better yet, what's the solution to their problems?
I mean, that's two team leaders right there saying that there are guys not buying into the program, right? Not doing. When you talk about having to prepare all week and then having to execute and buy in on Sunday, you're talking about the locker room. And I know everyone's focused on McDaniels right now, and rightfully so. This is a terrible, awful start, especially when you lose to Jeff Saturday and the Colts, even though, you know, it's not a one-for-one with coaches. But
I thought it was bad last week when they lost to Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, it's layers here, okay? I think there was a misassessment on Josh McDaniels' part, probably Dave Ziegler's part when they went in, that there was more work to be done here, and it was more of a micro-rebuild than they thought. The offensive line, you know, there's two holdovers from last season, and the line's not playing well. Renfro, Darren Waller, you've gotten basically nothing from them this season, which has deeply impacted the offense. Defense is playing horribly. They dumbed it down in terms of what the schemes they ran on Sunday were extremely simple schemes and still got beat. You're not getting anything out of Chandler Jones. But to me, just to hear two team leaders stand up there and say, and remember, they had to have like a players meeting, to say they feel like there's guys not buying in and playing the 60 minutes they need to play on Sunday. That's indicative of this not just being a coaching problem. There's a player problem.
It's a culture problem. It's a cultural problem as well.
Perfect word.
I think the bottom line is we got to stop saying the Raiders just lost a game they shouldn't lose. No, they're just not that good. Hey, we got a couple minutes left before we got to let you go.
That's right.
I want to sneak in a 2-for-1. On two quarterbacks who there were a lot of questions about and right now look like superstars. So I'm intentionally being hyperbolic when I ask these two questions, because that's how much fun it is to watch these two kids play. Is Tua Tagovailoa's Miami Dolphins offense the best offense in football right now? Mike McDaniel, when he has Tua Tagovailoa, And is Justin Fields the best running quarterback we've ever seen? Because he's putting up numbers we've never seen. Apologies to Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick. But really, those two guys, just break down their leap forward this season.
Well, Miami's undefeated when Tua is starting, right? That's pretty amazing. It's to be undefeated when Tua is your starting quarterback this season is a stat that I think a lot of people are missing. I will say Chris Greer, the general manager there, probably did as good a job as anybody I can remember in any offseason at looking at his quarterback and saying, let me go get the assets that to pair with him. And then not only that, you brought in a head coach in Mike McDaniel, and this should not be downplayed because Brian Flores did not believe in Tua. Okay, thought he was a soft player. Okay, straight. I'll just say it. I don't care. I'm out there.
Tua needs that affirmation. Yeah.
And Mike McDaniel connects. He connects with him, and he believes in him more than the owner and more than the past coach did. Right. I think that's a big deal. Their offense is exquisite. I think it's fantastic. I think Mike McDaniel straight up is a coach of the year candidate. It blows my mind how well he's done out of the box. Justin Fields, I can't even explain it. I really can't. A month ago, I thought they're destroying it. They're ruining him. He might not even get on this team next year. Now he looks like Michael Vick. Like, I don't even know. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
Cam Newton meets Lamar Jackson. I mean, he's running over people and past them. It's just,
you don't want to tackle him.
He might be the best because
he's bigger than those other guys.
Michael Holly, Michael Holly. Okay, but look at when he ran that long touchdown run, right? I think it was Kirby Joseph. If you go back and you watch, he is so fast. His gear is so different than any other player on the field in that moment. And he makes a directional change, really small. But to him, it looked like it was the easiest second to sixth gear shift. Like nothing. I watched it and I backed it up and watched it again. And I'm like, is that crazy? And it literally looked like everybody was in slow motion. He was just like, everything is slow around me. It's like like watching the Matrix when Neo figures out the Matrix. That's what it felt like when you watched it.
This one. No question. No, man. The dude.
Let me ask you real quick.
Michael, you watched him at Ohio State. I didn't know he had this at Ohio State.
I didn't either.
Maybe he didn't do it as much. I don't know. But this dude is next level. Yeah.
He didn't have to have this at Ohio State.
On the receivers.
He didn't have to. I think he has to have this now. This is something that he's developed. Real quick, Charles, who wins the AFC East? Who's your winner? Call it right now. Winner of the AFC East.
I still think it's Buffalo.
Okay.
I think Buffalo win it out. I think they win it.
Okay.
0-2 in the division.
Appreciate you, bro.
Trail of Miami with a loss to Miami.
I think they'll pick it up. A lot of football to be played.
Okay.
Hey, Michael, you should see Charles's. Michael, by the way, you should see Charles's fantasy roster. He has a juggernaut. He's got the Infinity Gauntlet.
Thank you for Christian Watson.
You're welcome.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Michael, a couple of weeks, as you know, of course, I was in Tampa for the Thursday night game, the loss to the Raiders, and that loss, or the Ravens, I beg your pardon, Baltimore Ravens, and that loss was one to their third in a row, I want to say, and it felt like they had hit rock bottom. It felt like 2002, which I know you remember well, last time a Brady team did not make the playoffs. It just felt like the Bucs were out of answers. Well, since then, they've won two games, including in Germany, over the plucky Seattle Seahawks, and now they're sitting at 5-5, heading into their bye week. And we say hello to our friend Ashley Ross, host of the Ashley Ross Show. Ashley, last time I saw you, you were in Tampa with me. And we saw how dejected Brady and the Bucs were after that game. Have they turned it around, in your opinion?
I think that they have. I think that they have, because the day after that game, it was announced that the divorce was finalized. So now all the personal things that were surrounding him can kind of get pushed to the side. And now they can really just focus on the play of football. And look, one thing we've learned after 20-something years, it's you do not count Tom Brady out. I don't care what the record is. I don't care how bad they look. Somehow, some way, he finds a way. And that's what he did in Germany.
What you think, Mike?
I think I still might be counting them out. I still might be. I'm telling you, that division's a trip. I love the NFC South, Ashley. And I know one of the losses that the Buccaneers have had is to the Panthers. And I think that game in week 17, call me crazy. Panthers are dangerous. They're a dangerous team. I'm not sure that the Buccaneers are just going to win this division outright. I still got the Falcons having something to say about it, and the Panthers too. Now, do you think that's crazy that the Panthers or Falcons might be able to challenge the Bucs for the top of the NFC South?
It is crazy, but then this year football has been crazy. I don't have much confidence in Atlanta because they're overachievers, right? No one really expected them to do much of anything. It was a bunch of guys who really are on their second chance trying to probably prove their next contract or next opportunity. Then you have Carolina. They went for like a fire sale. And then all of a sudden, I just think, to be honest, it's great culture and coaching. So shout out to Steve Wilks, the fact that they've been able to rattle off wins here and there. So when you look at Tampa, they still have weapons. They still have Tom Brady. I do understand that they've had some hits at the defense, but they still have a strong enough unit in that division that I would put my money on them in that division.
I'm somewhere in between. I would pick Tampa if you forced me to pick, but I don't think Carolina. I'm with you on Carolina. Maybe it's recency bias. I was just there. They didn't have a fire sale. They only traded McCaffrey. They kept all the other guys. They didn't want to throw in the towel on the season and get rid of their young players. And Steve Wilks has got those guys playing hard, tough football. I wouldn't count them out, but I'm with you, Ashley. I would bet on Brady. And if he gets in the playoffs, we'll see what happens. Speaking of craziness, though, you talked about this crazy season. No game has been wilder than Bills-Vikings. So, Michael, I'll ask you first before Ashley, because I know you've been wanting to get these jokes off. For you, was that more about the Vikings or was that about the Bills? I'm asking you an open-ended question, knowing the answer I'm going to get.
No. Look. No, it is about the Minnesota Vikings are an elite team. They're an elite team in the NFL, not just in the NFC, in the NFL. We keep waiting for them to collapse. They don't. They've got a lot of weaponry. They've got a lot of playmakers. So I'm going to give them the props. I like to win that game yesterday. They were down. They should have lost that game early.
27.
When Dalvin Cook had the 81-yard run, I thought, oh, that's nice. That's good for somebody in fantasy football. It's not going to have any impact on the bottom line. And it did. So the Vikings are a real team. Now, Buffalo. Now, let me just say.
Having said all that.
Okay. Everybody keeps saying, like, you know, hey, watch out for Buffalo. They got, you know, Super Bowl favorites. They got so much talent. Josh Allen already.
Sixth seed Buffalo.
Josh Allen already has 10 interceptions. Josh Allen has, I think, three lost fumbles so far. They haven't won a game in their division. They're 6-3. They're a game behind Miami. Miami has a game in hand against them. So, and the Jets have beaten them as well. So, I mean, I think we just kind of, and Charles did it when we had him on. Oh, yeah, they'll figure it out. No, I think the Bills, I think their problems are a little deeper than what we're saying. Because we just believe that Josh Allen magically is going to figure it out. I think what we found out, Ashley and Mike, is that the Bills, they have Josh Allen, but they got a lot of other problems too.
Ashley?
I 100% agree with you, Michael. I feel like this was a crown me game. And the two games this season, the Miami game and this game, the two games that I was looking at for Buffalo to really take that step, to take that surge. Coming into the season, that's all we heard. Buffalo, they're Super Bowl contenders. And I kind of felt like it was a little bit premature because Kansas City, although they had lost Tyreek, they were still Kansas City with Mahomes and Kelsey and Andy Reid. So with Buffalo, the fact that they couldn't pass this test, and then I feel like they fumbled the bag against Miami, this does not bode well for my confidence thinking that Buffalo is a team that can fully execute. They'll be in the dance. They'll get to OT. They'll get there with you. But they have yet to prove to me that they can take that next step that a real, real contender should take. Now, on the flip side, the Vikings, I was one of those people. I thought the Vikings were kind of fraudulent. You know, the NFC North, it's struggling. I think Green Bay with their win, they go to 4 wins. But they had such a large lead in that division. So I looked at the Vikings prior to yesterday as, they're out there. But I don't really super believe in Kirk Cousins, although I do on Sundays when he's playing on my fantasy team. But I think overall the Vikings, they did take a step in that game. But it is hard to determine, was it the Vikings truly winning that game or was it the Bills fumbling that game? So it's a little bit of both, but shout
it's
out
always
to Justin.
Both.
Yeah, it's always both.
The answer is usually both.
Answer.
Answer,
right,
good
answer
to see
always
you
both,
as always.
Right?
We appreciate
good to see you.
You
guys.
Ashley, thank you.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Mike, I just don't understand why they won't consider it. Full-time officials, why not? Why not? Why won't they consider it? They say it's not going to make things better. Why not just think about it, right? Does that make sense?
It makes too much sense. May not make enough dollars, though. Kind of like why they won't get rid of the slip field, the artificial turf. Money. Or maybe they just like us getting upset about it. Maybe it kind of adds to the
okay,
drama.
That's possible.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.